This is your AEW Dynamite review for Wednesday, December 9th, 2020. I am the Solemn Monster. This has been a very newsworthy week for AEW. One of the more newsworthy weeks, I think, all year long for the company. Coming off last night's Impact Wrestling show, tonight's AEW Dynamite. I am going to get into Impact. I did not watch all of Impact. But we are going to talk about Impact in a little bit here. We'll start out with that, the AEW stuff, and then get into tonight's show. This was a loaded show on paper. I mean, look at what they promised us tonight, the big follow-up with Sting. Sting would speak, right? Last week, Sting stung, Sting stang, whatever you want to call it. This week, we were going to hear his first words on TV. They started promoting a Shaquille O'Neal appearance midweek out of nowhere. I figured because this week's show was taped, so I figured it would be something they would insert. He wouldn't actually be in the ring or anything like that, and he wasn't. And actually, that turned out to be one of the more underwhelming parts of tonight's show. A show that overall I thought was very good, very busy. There's a lot going on, and that's a good thing. They have a lot of different things going on. I think if you're not interested in one thing, you might be interested in a different part of the show. It's nice to have some variety, but it just feels like right now there's just a lot to sink your teeth into on the show. There were parts that I thought were a little underwhelming, and we'll talk about that in the main event as well. I didn't think it was a bad match, just very overbooked there at the end of the show, the Dynamite Diamond Ring stuff. The big question is, and we'll find out our answer tomorrow, did this show crack the million mark? It's been very difficult for Dynamite to get to a million live viewers when they're opposed by NXT. They've done it a few times before, unopposed. I don't believe they've ever cracked the million mark head-to-head with NXT. A lot of people seem very convinced that this would be the week they would do it. I think I said last week I didn't think they would do it. Now, I'm going to stick to that. We'll know in less than 24 hours. What do you guys? Do you think this was a show that would have kept people's attention, gotten a million viewers tonight? There was certainly a lot going on, and I haven't even talked about Kenny Omega and Don Callis, who took a chopper. They took a chopper into Daly's place tonight. They got the Charlotte Flair WrestleMania entrance here on Dynamite. Now, last night, as I mentioned, was a big night. It was a big night for Impact Wrestling. Tuesday nights, Impact Wrestling airs on Access TV. And last night's show, their previous viewership record on Twitch was 17,000 people. So the most number of people they've ever had before this week, watching them live on Twitch was 17,000. Last night, they peaked when Kenny Omega was on TV with 52,000, or a little over 52,000. So they blew past their old record, set a brand new record on Twitch, 221,000 viewers on Access TV. That is up from 166,000 the week before. You got to imagine there's a fair number of people who don't have Access who are going to watch it on Twitch or Facebook or YouTube. So it sounds like a good number to me. It's hard to gauge, again, because it's so scattered. People just are going to find it the way that they can because they just don't, like, I don't have Access. And I have pretty much everything. Well, not everything, but I have pretty much what I need. But I, even before, when I had cable, before I cut the cord, I didn't have Access. So that's a number that I think Impact should be very happy with. Now, like I said, I did not watch the entire show. And you're not here to listen to me review the Impact show. But I will talk about the AEW stuff. I saw the paid advertisement. They inserted a paid ad into the show with Tony Khan and Tony Schiavone. Tony Schiavone is all over the place recently. Tonight, he was in like almost every other segment. He was on commentary. But I mean, he's in the ring doing an interview with Sting. He's sitting in a chair with a cup of water in his hand interviewing Brandy and Shaq. He's in the ring to interview Kenny Omega. Tony Schiavone is everywhere. I'm not complaining because Tony Schiavone is great. And he was in this paid advertisement with Tony Khan. I like where they're going with this. I like where they're going with it. So long as Tony Khan does not become a recurring character on Dynamite. We did not see Tony Khan on television tonight, which is a good sign. But I think if he makes appearances like he did on Impact, but keeps them to Impact, you know, sporadic appearances here and there, then I would be fine with that. I like that. You know what it kind of reminded me of? And I'm sure other people have made the comparison. It reminded me a little bit of what Vince McMahon did back in 93. He was doing a favor for Jerry Lawler. Jerry Lawler was down in the USWA territory and said, hey, how would you like to work an angle and come on down and play heel? Because down in Memphis, Lawler was the babyface. On WWE, he was the heel. And so Vince McMahon, who at the time was just the announcer, right? Not everybody knew that he was the owner of the company. He trekked on down to USWA. He actually made an appearance. He made one live appearance there in person at ringside with Pat Patterson. But it was a lot of the promos that he would just send in. And this was the earliest incarnation. This was the first time we got to see heel Vince McMahon, only we didn't see shit. I certainly didn't. It wasn't until many years later in the advent of YouTube that everybody all of a sudden found these promos and they're like, whoa, where is this from? Well, how come I never got to see this Vince McMahon before? Because back then, you couldn't know unless you lived in that territory, unless you lived in that area. Still very different than what we saw on Impact, but there are similarities. You know, we see Tony Khan. Now, Tony Khan is not, from what we've seen, he's not anywhere near the performer that Vince McMahon is. But on Impact, Tony Khan was making all sorts of, like, backhanded comments and compliments about Impact, talking about how, you know, I decided to buy an ad to help you guys out. I'm going to help boost your bottom line. I'm going to pump some money into your operation. He's just being very almost sarcastic about it. He came across like a douchebag who was throwing around his money. Almost like, you know, throwing dollar bills down and saying, hey, get down and grovel for it. That's kind of how he came off in this segment. Very subtle, but heelish. It was there, and I liked it. Tony Schiavone was just the straight man. He didn't say much. And what he did say, he had that great deadpan delivery. At one point, Tony Khan also did one other thing. He teased the rumors. People had been speculating, was Tony Khan going to buy Impact? So he was playing off some of those internet rumors as well. And as soon as I heard that, as soon as I heard him broach the idea of buying Impact, my first thought was, run. Tony, run. You're a smart guy, right? I know you've got a lot of different investments, and you've got a lot of different sports teams, and you got your own wrestling company, and that's great. So you're obviously somewhat bright, at least. Do yourself a favor and run the other way. Do not make the same mistake that Dixie's daddy and Jeff's daddy made, trying to pump up the Impact operation. It never works out. It's bad enough he has to look at the standings every week in the AFC South. You don't need this. You don't need this kind of stress in your life. Just move on. But I loved it when he asked Tony Schiavone about, hey, didn't you have a cup of coffee in TNA once? Weren't you in TNA once, very briefly? And Tony Schiavone says, yeah, I was there for one night, and then I quit the business for 18 years. Which is true. He made one appearance. That was, I think, during the early Russo era in TNA. I remember Schiavone showed up. He was wearing, like, a Hawaiian shirt. And he was just cursing and healing on people. And then you didn't see him again. That was it. That was until he came back to MLW a few years ago. He was completely divorced, I think, from the pro wrestling business. But I like how they slipped that little dig in there. You know, yeah, the one time I showed up in TNA, I quit the business for 18 years. That's what I mean when I bring up the Vince McMahon stuff. It kind of reminds me of that a little bit. But they had a segment where Rich Swann, the Impact Wrestling champion, was trying to walk into the parking lot, and he was denied entry. The security guard wouldn't let him in. And they said, well, this is only reserved for the champ. And he thought Moose was playing some kind of joke on him, but he goes, no, Kenny Omega. And that didn't sit very well with Rich Swann, and that was a little tease there for what could potentially be a match down the road, champion against champion, maybe even a title match between Rich Swann and Kenny Omega. And look, none of this may even happen. Right now, all we have are a bunch of teases. We have Sting on TV. We don't know for sure if he's going to wrestle. Yeah, I know there are reports saying that AEW plans for him to wrestle, but we don't know. All we have right now are a bunch of teases, which we got more of that tonight with Sting, and a lot of questions, but we don't know yet. We have to wait and let it all play out. Kenny Omega against Rich Swann. That'd be a hell of a match. They didn't put that in there, I don't think, for nothing. Then we had Josh Matthews. Now, thankfully, I did not watch the rest of the show. I didn't have to listen to Josh Matthews do commentary, but Josh Matthews, you know, he did a fine job here in the final segment. He got on the bus. Don Callis and Kenny Omega, they arrived on a luxury bus, and Josh Matthews went on the bus, and he was going to interview them, find out what's going on here. And Don Callis talked about the Golden Sheik having trained him to get into the wrestling business, which is a shoot. I mean, you can find footage from many, many, many years ago of the Sheik and a young Don Callis first breaking into the business. Talked about that and how he was introduced to the Sheik's 10-year-old nephew, a little kid named Kenny. So their relationship goes back many, many years, 27 years. That's how long Don Callis has known Kenny Omega. He said, look, I didn't come back to wrestling to do commentary for New Japan. Wake up. This was all part of the plan. And they portrayed it as, and they did the same thing tonight on Dynamite, where they portrayed this as something that has been in the works for over two decades. That this was some kind of nefarious plan that was hatched many, many years ago. It's a bit of a stretch. But they're trying to give you a long-term booking explanation for how and why this all came about. So they know each other a very long time. He mentioned the fact that it was all part of the plan for him to be invited to come to AEW and do commentary, which he did at Full Gear for Kenny's match with Hangman Page. Come to Dynamite last week, invited again by Tony Khan to do commentary for the match with Jon Moxley. He goes, it was all part of the plan. What I want to know is, if it's all part of the plan, how did he know that Tony Khan was going to extend the invitation to him? Or should I suspend my disbelief a little bit? Boy, he better be really happy that the plan went exactly according to the way they wanted it to. But it's all part of the plan. He said he was the one who booked the match at Wrestle Kingdom a few years ago between Chris Jericho and Kenny Omega, which is true. Callis has been friends with both of them for a very long time. And it was his planting the seed in Jericho's head that got Jericho to agree to do the match. And Tony Khan has made the comment that, that match is really what led to, eventually, the formation of AEW. Therefore, Don Callis and Kenny Omega take credit for the birth of AEW. All the more reason for Jim Cornette to hate Kenny Omega. I know, I don't hear all of his stuff, but the one thing I know, he does not like Kenny Omega. That I do know. Omega talked about being a comic book collector as a kid, but he had to stop because he couldn't find those rare comics. But now he's the AEW World Champion. He has the most valuable prize of all. So he doesn't mind traveling and having some fun, going from promotion to promotion and finding other prizes, maybe that are not quite as luxurious as the AEW title, but he mentioned being the AAA Mega Champion, which he is. And by the way, Kenny is defending the championship this Saturday at Triple Mania, or is supposed to be, against Laredo Kid. So if he gets out of that match with the title, he has the AAA Mega title. I don't know why he doesn't carry it around with him. He mentioned that. He said, well, maybe, who knows, maybe one day I could be the Impact World Champion. You never know. So, again, another little drop of a tease for a match maybe with Rich Swann. He says he wants to be the belt collector. So, basically, what he's saying here is he wants to be Ultimo Dragon in that picture from many years ago where Ultimo Dragon is holding up all 10 belts. That famous photo. That's what he wants to be. He wants to be the belt collector. I think Omega, he can be very awkward on promos. Tonight, actually, I thought he was a lot better than he was on Impact. He wasn't bad on Impact, but he could be, I don't know, a little rough around the edges. Don Callis comes off very well. Don Callis comes off like a dick but he comes off great like a heel manager would. That's why I think it's the perfect role for him. And if he's going to be Omega's manager going forward, I mean, there's even talk that his contract with Impact is going to be up very soon. He may be leaving Impact and coming to AEW to be basically full-time a manager for Kenny Omega. I don't know how true or accurate that is, but that's the scuttlebutt. I think it's the perfect role for him. I think he's great. I really do. I think he's great in that role. Callis is a great talker. He comes across as just this slimy, like a promoter, like a Paul Heyman type. So I like this combo. I like the two of them being together. And I got to say, though, you know, this whole belt collector thing, the one thing that really struck me, and I love the idea of Kenny Omega maybe going from place to place in these big or semi-big promotions and challenging or even winning their world title and becoming something of a belt collector. But it makes me think of Nick Aldis. And Nick Aldis is still the NWA world champion. And I would watch NWA Power, and I thought Nick Aldis carried himself, and he does. He carries himself very well. He carries himself like a real world champion that you would have seen 30 years ago, right? Who kind of goes from promotion to promotion. He dresses to the nines. He's a good talker. He looks the part. He may not be the flashiest guy in the ring. He's not. But he looks the part. And it made me think of him because it almost seems like Omega may be stealing that role away from him. The pandemic really hurt Aldis because you don't really hear too much about him. He's not the traveling champion anymore because the pandemic just upended everything. And it's you know, a lot of promotions aren't even running shows at this point. Or they're running shows in empty buildings. And so the whole traveling champion thing for Aldis, it really came to a screeching halt earlier this year. And it almost seems like Omega maybe now is stealing a little bit of his thunder. But I have to say, you know, as I think about this and I start to fantasy book it out in my head, and I know some of you are probably doing the same thing, and I'm probably getting ahead of myself, but if this is the plan, and if Omega was going to go place to place and maybe challenge for other titles, I just picture, you know, you got Ibushi going to the Tokyo Dome next month. Ibushi goes to the Dome. He wins the IWGP title. And I fully expect there to be some kind of working relationship, whatever that looks like next year, between AEW and New Japan. And my brain just explodes at the possibilities. You could have Omega as the champion here collecting all these belts, and then Ibushi wins the IWGP, and who knows? Who knows where that can lead? And maybe I'm getting ahead of myself, but it's fun to think about. But it was a good night at Fear Impact. It was a good night for AEW because it kept people talking. I liked it. I liked, you know, just having that interaction between them, I think, for the fans is a lot of fun. You can debate until you turn blue in the face. What does AEW get out of it? We know what Impact gets out of it. What does AEW get out of it? You know what, though? As a viewer, it's fun. When promotions work together like that, however big or small they may be, the fans win. And Impact, it's only a positive thing for them. But I think it's good for AEW as well. And now the question is, that small audience, that relatively small audience that Impact does have, I wonder, you know, coming out of the show last night, they were promoting a Kenny Omega major announcement tonight, which we never got. That was a letdown. But do you think, you know, is that going to be the difference between Impact maybe helping AEW get to the million mark, doing a million, or maybe instead of a million, maybe they only do 950,000? Is it going to make an impact? No pun intended. We'll find out tomorrow afternoon. So there was a show tonight. AEW had their own show. That's kind of why we're here. So I guess we ought to get into it. Thank you, by the way, for tuning in. Thank you for choosing me for your Dynamite coverage tonight. We are going to get to your super chats, and I thank everybody who has sent one in so far. We had the Young Bucks against TH2, Jack Evans and Helico. If TH2 were to win this match, they would then receive a shot at the AEW Tag Team Championship. This was all action. It was what you would expect from a match between these two teams. It's the Young Bucks. It's Jack Evans. I mean, I'm not even going to mention Angelico. It's Jack Evans, so what do you expect? You're going to have all these wacky flips and dives and crazy 450s and springboards. And it's the worst type of match for somebody like me to try to watch and enjoy and at the same time take notes on, because it's just fucking impossible. So I do the best I can. I hate having to take notes on matches like this. There's just no point. There's no point. Matt Jackson powerbombed Jack Evans into the acclaimed Anthony Bowens and Max Caster. They're the new young team that they're starting to promote. They've been on Dark. They were on Dynamite last week. They were the ones who approached the Young Bucks in the back and started rapping on them, where Max Caster was rapping. They were in the audience, and so Jack Evans got powerbombed onto them. They weren't too happy about that. The Bucks hit their risky business double-team move to Angelico, who kicked out. More bang for your buck backfired. Angelico got his knees up, and then when Matt Jackson came off the top rope, he was selling it like he hurt his knee, he hurt his ankle. Remember, he's got that bad ankle in storyline. So he started favoring the ankle. Jack Evans hit a poison Rana on Matt Jackson, followed that up with a 450 to Nick Jackson out on the floor. One of the first scenes in my very first Ring of Honor show. The first thing I can even remember at the first Ring of Honor show I ever went to in 2006 was being in the second row and looking down in the opening match and seeing Jack Evans, who crashed and burned on some kind of wacky twisting dive out of the ring to the floor. I don't even remember who he was wrestling. I can probably go back and find out. I think it was called In Your Face, Ring of Honor In Your Face or something. But I just remember looking down at him and he's just in this crumpled heap. And I'm like, this poor bastard. And here we are in 2020 and the guy is still doing just batshit crazy moves. So back inside, Angelico locked a submission on Matt and the injured ankle, tried to force a tap out. Nick Jackson hit a senton, broke the hold. Evans with a springboard out over the top rope, but the Bucks catch him. And now Matt Jackson's got him in a tombstone position. Nick Jackson climbs up onto the apron into the ring, and he hits a springboard off the top rope out to the floor. He got some height on this. Hits the Indy Taker, tombstone on the floor, and I'm thinking, this bastard, he better not get up. Don't you dare get up. And he sold it. He didn't get up. Back inside, the Bucks hit stereo super kicks to Angelico, the BTE trigger, and that finished him off. The Young Bucks get the win, so there will be no title shot for TH2. Bowens and Caster, they came over the barricade. They were threatening a fight. They were threatening to come inside. SCU, Christopher Daniels, Frankie Kazarian, they come into the ring, and they hold them off. And I'm thinking at this point, this is before they announce the match for next week, I'm thinking Daniels and Kazarian are a great veteran team to put in there with Bowens and Caster, and they can lose and put the young guys over. And that's really what we should see. And then I'm thinking, well, maybe not. Maybe they're going to just build to some kind of program with the Bucks and SCU, which honestly, I really don't have any interest in seeing. So I was happy later on when they announced next week's card, they are in fact setting up for SCU against the Acclaimed. And, you know, sometimes we see these new teams like Top Flight a few weeks ago. They'll debut on Dynamite and they'll lose. And there's nothing wrong with that. If they go out there and they have a strong showing, that's fine. I would like to see Bowens and Caster pick up the win. SCU, they lose nothing by losing the match. You know, you elevate a young team. They can't get to the Young Bucks until they beat at least one notable team, right? So there you go, SCU. They get a big win next week over SCU, and they can start to climb their way up to a match with the Bucks. That's what I would do. So in the ring, Tony Schiavone. One of his many duties on this show, he is preparing to interview Cody Rhodes. And Cody comes to the ring, and Cody is with Arn Anderson. And before they could even say a word about anything, the lights go out. And we see the video of the Crow on the screen, not to be confused with the Vulture that we saw at War Games a few days ago. I assume that Vulture was back on NXT tonight, if I'm correct. I did not look at any of the NXT stuffs, but I assume we had a return on tonight's show. But we saw the vulture or the crow. The snow begins to fall, the fake snow in Jacksonville. And Sting emerges from the tunnel. He's got a big smile on his face. Last week, Sting really just kind of had this stoic, kind of neutral look, almost like a Michael Myers-esque look. You couldn't really tell if he was happy to be there, if he was angry about something. This week, it was just Sting. He was just happy to be there, man. He was the happiest guy in the world. And he comes into the ring, and Arn Anderson right away says to Sting, he's up in Sting's face, and he says, look, I had to get a close-up view to make sure it was the real thing. I don't know if he thought it was the fucking NWO Sting or what. Was it Jeff Farmer? Was he the NWO? Once he was sure it was not the NWO Sting, Arn Anderson said, I'll leave you two alone. And he went to leave. And Tony Schiavone, who was going to conduct the interview, said, you know what? I'm going to bow out too. And Sting was like, no. He goes, Tony. He goes, come over here. Come on over here. He said, Tony, bring it in and give me a hug. So he get him and Sting, they embrace in the ring. This is like their first big reunion on TV in 20 plus years, right? 20, 22, 25 years, something like that. And Sting says, how many years has it been? He goes, you know what would really make me happy? And make all the people happy. If you could just one more time give us that signature call. And Tony says, all right. He grabs the mic and he goes, it's Sting. You know, I can't do it the way he does it. But, you know, he exclaims that it's Sting. And now Sting is so happy. He's marking out. He's like a little kid in there. If little kids were 61 years old with a bad neck and spinal stenosis. But I digress. So now it's down to Sting and Cody. We're down to the two of them in the ring together. And Cody says, I've been waiting a really long time for this. I mean, I've been waiting a really long time to get you in the ring. Or how did he phrase it? I think he said, to share a ring with you, I think is what he said. And Sting said, Cody says, I'm not here for you. And he says, there's something really familiar, I mean really familiar about this place. And he looks up into the rafters. And the camera cuts, and who is sitting up in the rafters with the TNT title? Darby Allin. There's Darby Allin, or everybody all week was joking about, you know, Darby is his son's thing. He saw his father last week. They went face to face. So Sting is looking up at his son in the rafters. Sting confirmed that he is officially signed. Long-term, multi-year deal with AEW. And at the end of the segment, he puts his arm around, he doesn't hug him necessarily, but he kind of hugs him. He puts his arm around Cody and he's all smiles. And he puts Cody's head against his, like he's like his proud father or something. And he says, see you around, kid. And Sting walks to the back. And Cody didn't seem very pleased by that. He didn't seem very pleased by that line. So that's our first tease of a future match between Sting and Cody. And not only did they tease a possible match between them, but you've got Darby Allin. Are they teasing a match? Are they teasing some sort of mentorship between them? We had a segment right before this where Darby Allin is being examined by some kind of psychiatrist or psychologist. Who would be the one to give you an ink blot test? Would that be a psychologist? I think that would be a psychologist. What is the difference between a psychiatrist and a psychologist? Can somebody explain this to me? This always drives me nuts. What is the difference? Who is the one that would give you an ink blot test? I've never had an ink blot test before. I don't know why I would need an ink blot test. Although some of the people I have to deal with on a daily basis, I probably should have an inkblot test. But in this inkblot test, the person holds a card up and it's got Sting's face paint on it. And Darby just looks at it because he wants to know, what do you see? And Darby looks at it and he just smiles. So they were dropping a couple of hints here in these two segments that there's going to be some kind of interaction between Darby Allin and Sting. And maybe it's not going to be a match. You know, maybe it is just a respect thing. Maybe it is kind of a mentor, student type thing. But they were definitely teasing that there would be something going on between those two. And the other thing that Sting did, he dropped the old Sting line that the only thing for sure about Sting is that nothing's for sure. He dropped that line as well. So they're keeping his intentions very vague as to why he's back. He didn't come out and give us, here's why I'm here. Here's why I'm back on TV. Here's why I'm in AEW. They didn't give it away. They're still keeping it very vague. Just enough, I think, to keep people interested in tuning in to see what's next. What's he going to do? Is he going to wrestle? Is he going to get physical? You know, is he going to go shopping with Tony Schiavone, his BFF? You know, are they going to go to the mall? You know, everything's open in Florida, so you can pretty much do anything. You can go to the mall. You can catch probably a baseball game. You know, Tony Schiavone's a big baseball fan. I'd be down for that. We have a bunch of skits with Sting and Tony Schiavone just, you know, getting an ice cream cone. Sting's already got the bat. I mean, they can go to a baseball field and play some ball. That could be very entertaining. I don't know how that makes you money, though. That's the only thing, right? In wrestling, you're supposed to kind of make money with this. I don't know how that makes you money, but it would entertain me. And you know what? At the end of the day, that's all that matters. If I'm entertained, then that's all I care about. I don't give a shit about anything else. The other thing that helps Sting is he is 61 years old. And he doesn't look his age. He looks good for his age. But he is 61 years old. But the fact that he wears face paint, it hides that. So he really, I mean, the hair is thinning more, but he really doesn't look all that different than he did 5 years ago when we last saw him in WWE. So the face paint can really cover up and hide his age. So that helps him out a lot. We had Brian Pillman Jr. and Griff Garrison. They call themselves the Varsity Blondes. The Varsity Don't Call Me Hollywood Blondes, taking on FTR. Tully Blanchard got involved, hit a cheap shot on Brian Pillman with the referee distracted. We had Dax Harwood fighting out of a suplex. Pillman, who was being beaten down for a while, he makes the hot tag to Griff Garrison. And Pillman tagged in. I'm sorry. Pillman tagged in. Right, I wanted to mention the Brainbuster. He got hit with a pretty wicked Brainbuster. And that was the finish after that. The Goodnight Express picks up the win. The team of Garrison and Pillman, I know that they've spent quite a bit of time on Dark. I've seen some of their matches, but not all of them. It's going to be fun to see where they end up in 6 months. I figured when this match started, it wouldn't be a squash, but this was meant to be an easy win for FTR. But now that they're wrestling on Dynamite, or at least I hope that we're going to start to see more of them on TV, it'll be fun in about 6 months to see where they are and how they progress. I thought it was a good match. So I want to follow the progression of this team and see where they go. You know, are they going to be a New Age Hollywood Blondes? Some big shoes to fill, right? Steve Austin and Brian Pillman. I don't want to put all that pressure on Griff Garrison. You might have to change that name. Every time I hear Griff, I think of the crime dog. Wasn't he McGriff? Dustin Rhodes. Dustin Rhodes would know. I should ask Dustin. Dustin Rhodes has been around forever. I mean, he's been around for 50 years now. I could ask him. He probably would know about McGruff and the bear with the fires. Smokey the Bear. Is that his name? Smokey the Bear? Dustin Rhodes took on 10 of the Dark Order. See, this is why I have to eat, man. This is why when I don't eat, my mind turns to mush and I start just talking about stuff that just doesn't make any sense. You gotta feed me. I'm like the fucking gremlins, man. You gotta put some food in me so I can be on point. If I don't eat, I'm like, I'm a mess. I'm talking about McGriff and cartoon dogs. So Dustin right away is laying in strikes here on 10. And they fought to the floor. Dustin got driven into the barricade. And 10 hit a pretty damn good spine buster on Dustin in the ring. 10 sent Dustin out to the floor, landed a pump kick on Aaron Solo, Bailey's significant other. He was in the crowd. And back inside, Dustin hit a series of clotheslines and a running bulldog for the win out of nowhere. This really did just feel like it came out of nowhere. So Evil Uno comes down to the ring, and he's got the rest of the Dark Order and Anna Jay. She was the first person I saw come out. By the way, Anna Jay was on the AEW Unrestricted podcast. They did a video podcast with her. It's up on AEW's YouTube channel. Very good interview. Very good interview. You get to watch Anna Jay for like 45 minutes. What's not to like? But it's a very informative interview. But Evil Uno comes out. He goes, look, the Dustin, hold on. Hold on a second, okay? Just calm down. He goes, I can't change our past, and I can't change anything that's happened, you know, with your family and the group, but I can change our future. He goes, in this company, you're only the third most important Rhodes. And he says, I want you to take your rightful place in the Dark Order as seven. Now, there are going to be some people who don't get the significance of seven. I'm sure a lot of you do, but if you're a newer fan, Dustin Rhodes, when he left WWE to go back to WCW, he couldn't be Goldust anymore. And so I think it was Russo. I think Russo might have still been in booking power at that time, probably Russo. They came up with this new character, this new gimmick for him called Seven. And they did some vignettes. And if I remember, it's been a long time since I've seen it, but I think one of the vignettes showed him looking in a young child's window. And he looked like that guy from that movie Powder many years ago, just like the all white face, like white makeup on his face. And he had this weird black hat and this black trench coat. And it's creepy as shit. Like, he's outside this kid's window, just kind of looking and peering inside. And by the way, the kid in that video was Cody Rhodes, for those who don't know. But he's peering into the window, and it's this just this creepy new character that he was going to debut as. Well, apparently, I think the executives or the standards and practices folks at Turner, they didn't like the idea because, like a lot of people, they said, this is a little weird because this guy looks like a child predator. I mean, he's looking through a window. It looks like he's going to kidnap this kid. This is just weird. You've got to just abandon this. Abort. Abort mission. So Seven lasted one night. When he finally debuted on TV, he literally just started pulling. I think he pulled off his gear. He started shitting on the gimmick. So it died before it even had a chance to get off the ground. That's the history of Seven. So I'm sure he wasn't very amused being told that there would be a spot in the Dark Order for him as Seven. I'm sure that's still a bit of a sore spot for him. So he extends his hand out for the handshake, and Dustin slaps him across the face. And Evil Uno falls down to the ground. Uno tells the Dark Order, stand back. It's all good. It's okay. Stand back. He says that Dustin will soon have a change of heart. So the Dark Order, they are on a recruitment mission. They're trying to get Hangman Page. Now they're trying to get Dustin Rhodes. This is what happens to the NWO. When you just start bringing people in all the time. I mean, it's one thing to try to get Hangman Page. No disrespect to Dustin, but come on. I mean, who's going to be next? They're going to try to get Kip Sabian. They're going to try to get, what was that guy saw in Dark that time? Forgot his name. I mean, at some point, they have enough members. You gotta cool the jets a little bit. And I guess Brody Lee, I mean, last I heard, he had some kind of ankle injury. I assume he's still out nursing the ankle injury. We haven't even heard his name mentioned in a while. I don't know what the deal is. I don't know what is going on with Brody Lee, but hopefully it's nothing too serious. And I guess I haven't been seeing the last few episodes of Being the Elite. Maybe he's been on there, but he certainly hasn't been on Dynamite. So let me play some catch up here with some of your messages, man. We got a lot more to cover here, but I want to show some love to Andrew. He was numero uno in the Dark Order. He donated $50 on the stream a little bit earlier. It says, always love the stream, never miss a podcast. Ordered your mom's book today, looking forward to sharing it with my kids. That's very, very nice of you. What he's referring to, my mother, before she passed away, she had authored a children's story. And I was able to get it published the year after, you know, she passed away. And I hadn't mentioned it in a while, but now with the holidays coming up, you know, it's a great gift if you've got kids or you know somebody who's got kids. So if you hop on over on my Twitter, @Solomonster, I put a link to it on Amazon. It's The Adventure of Hardy the Horse. I know a lot of you guys have bought a copy. Share with your kids or nieces and nephews. It's very cool. Very cool. I love seeing those photos holding the book up. A great stocking stuffer. So thank you to Andrew. Lord Frieza, thank you, my friend. Always good to hear from you. And Ryan Spies says, I really enjoyed the Dark Order actively attempting to recruit people. Also, as disappointing as Miro's booking has been, him killing everybody was cool. Yes, we are going to talk about Miro as well. Miro was not playing video games tonight, although he did treat one of the production people like a video game character. Poor guy was eliminated very, very harshly at the end of the show. Tony Schiavone, I said he was all over the place. Now we get to a part of the show that just made me laugh. If this was meant to be serious, if this was meant to get me interested in what's to come, it did not work on me. It just made me kind of shake my head and laugh. Tony Schiavone had a pre-taped sit-down interview with Shaquille O'Neal, one of the all-time greats. Just ask him, he'll tell you, right? Shaq, man, great NBA legend. He's on Inside the NBA with Chuck, Charles Robinson, right? You love the banter between them. Shaq's everywhere. He's in all the Icy Hot commercials. He's got some other sponsorship. I see him all the time on TV now. And AEW, it was a nice little coup for them to get him on their TV show. But this was not just the sit-down interview with Tony Schiavone and Shaq. It was Tony Schiavone, Shaq, and Brandi Rhodes. Clearly one of the biggest names on the AEW roster, Brandi Rhodes. And Brandi Rhodes is very upset that Tony gave Shaq a better intro than he did for her. Shaq says that he is a fan of, and by the way, I have to say, I like Shaq. I like Shaq. And I know he's a big wrestling fan. I mean, his involvement in wrestling goes back to WCW in the mid-90s, right? When they had him in for, I think it was the Hogan Flair match at the Spring Stampede. And then he made a bunch of appearances in WWE. So he's a big fan. Big wrestling fan. He has the charisma on this show, in this segment. He had the charisma of a wet piece of wood. It's just like negative charisma. Which is not the way that he is when he's kind of in his element and he's on his show. But on this show, in this segment, he had the charisma of a doorknob. But he's sitting there and he's talking about how he's a big fan of Jade Cargill, the woman who debuted a few weeks ago on TV. Remember, Brandi came out and she went crazy on this woman. Cut that great promo that I reenacted. I did the best I could with it. But he says he's a fan of Jade. They go back a long way, and he wants to see her succeed in AEW. He didn't say how he knows her or what the nature of their friendship or their relationship. Maybe I don't want to know, but apparently he knows this woman, and he wants to see her do well in AEW. But he doesn't condone what she did to Brandi's arm a few weeks ago. If you remember, she broke her arm in that backstage segment. She put her arm in a chair. And she broke Brandi's arm. Shaq then brings up Cody. He goes, on another subject, your husband, Cody, says, when I went at him on Twitter, I was just having some fun. You know, I was just ribbing. I was just having a good time. That's what I do. I didn't mean anything by it. Didn't mean anything harmful. Just having a good time. And so just like that, the issue with Cody appeared to be extinguished. They started something and they immediately put the flame out, which I'm okay with because that means that we get to avoid the possibility of a match, which I think would have been a disaster. So that's probably for the better that they did that, but it just seemed like such a waste. So then Brandi gets up and she's about to leave and she goes to shake hands with Shaq. And they shake hands and Shaq says, one more thing. He goes, while your arm is in that sling, you're going to be in that sling for a while, says, you should watch Jade. You could probably get some pointers from her, I guess, on how to work. And Brandy just acts like, you're joking, right? And Shaq says, no, I'm serious. You should pay attention to her. She might be able to teach you something. And Brandy just is, she loses it. She's not happy. She says she's sick of this shit. Tony Schiavone had a cup of water in his hand. She grabbed the cup of water. She doused Shaq with the water, splashed it right in his face. And they got this shot of Shaq sitting there with water dripping down his face and this shocked look. And then she called him an overgrown asshole. And she walked away. You know, Charles Barkley has been waiting years to say that to Shaq. He's jealous as shit that she got to say it and he couldn't. But he's probably thinking the same thing. But she called him an overgrown asshole. And she walked off. Who does this woman think she is? And I watched this and the segment ended at that point. That was it. That was the whole segment. That was the whole segment with Shaq. And I watched this and I started laughing. I was like laughing at myself or not at myself. I was laughing. I do that too sometimes. I was laughing at the segment with nobody else around just sitting here thinking this was their great idea for Shaq to just do a segment to get her in. This was Shaq's big involvement. I mean, they must really have high hopes pinned on this Jade Cargill. I mean, that's one way to look at it. The other way you can look at it is the fact that this was just done to somehow elevate Brandi Rhodes, of all people, which is even more laughable that they would use Shaq for that purpose. See, I'm just more confused about, is Brandi a heel or a face? Can we decide, or is AEW's mantra that there are no heels and faces? There's just shades of gray. You gotta set certain boundaries. You gotta define things to a degree here. I've seen, in the last few months, I feel like I've seen Brandy as a heel and a face and back to a heel and then back to a face, and I'm not sure what the fuck this woman is supposed to be. But at the beginning of this segment, when she was kind of going off on Tony, oh, you introduce him this way, you introduce me, you know, this way, she definitely came off heelish. But a few weeks ago, she was a babyface. So what is she supposed to be? By the time all is said and done, this woman is going to be the Big Show of AEW. Now, she's got a lot of catching up to do to catch up to the likes of Kane and Big Show. That is the only time you will ever hear me compare Brandi Rhodes to the Big Show. But that is what she is on her way to be. I don't know. I don't know what is going on with this woman. Jade Cargill broke her arm. Brandi was the clear-cut babyface in this, and then she came across tonight very differently. I'll leave it at that. She came across very differently. So I don't know what this segment was really supposed to be. I just thought that this was kind of a waste. That's what I thought this was. You bring in Shaquille O'Neal to get over Brandi Rhodes. All right. The Sky Genie channel, for no reason at all, here is a super chat about Virgil. I read that. I thought that said virgin. So, in fact, it does say Virgil. So, thank you. I don't know if you were talking about me. I was about to go off on you. But he said Virgil. So, you're still okay with me. Thank you. Thank you, Sky Genie. Pedro with the 30 plus. If the plan is not eventually to make Orange Cassidy a world champion, is it a mistake to protect him so much against guys who are already stars like Cody and Jericho and guys who clearly will be like MJF? Well, we'll talk about Orange Cassidy a little bit more when we get to the main event. They have done a very good job of protecting him. I don't know where he goes or where he fits in at this point as far as like championships are concerned. He's had three different TNT title shots. He lost every single one of them. I don't see him as a world champion. I know we have a lot of Orange Cassidy fans. I mean, I like the guy, but he's not going to be the world champion. I don't want to see him as the world champion. He's not. He's not. Compared to the other talent they have in the company right now and the other stars and the names they have, he's not at that level. So he's not going to be there anytime soon. I don't know where he goes after tonight's main event. I'm not sure where he really fits into the picture other than with Best Friends feuding with Miro and Kip and just kind of slotted in at that level. And it is a little bit strange, you know, to protect him so much against people and have him get wins over people like Jericho and bigger names, but not have some kind of grander plan for him. But I just never saw him, you know, elevated above to that level anyway. I know he's got a lot of fans, and, you know, clearly he's a fan favorite in the company, but I just don't see him at that level at all. I cannot even envision it. So we'll get to more of your super chats as we roll on. I do appreciate everybody sending those in. Chris Jericho last week, he issued an ultimatum to the rest of the Inner Circle that if they didn't get their shit together, there would be no more Inner Circle. He was going to disband the group. Because ever since MJF joined, there's been nothing but problems, and this guy doesn't like that guy, and they're all like at each other's throats. And so this was the ultimatum week. He gave them 7 days to shape up. 7 days have gone by, and here we are on the show tonight. They were all out there with the exception of Santana. I don't know where he was, but he was not there. Chris Jericho said that this could be the last night for the Inner Circle. He's tired of everyone acting like a bunch of punks. Talked about Hager doesn't like Wardlow, and Sammy doesn't like MJF, and Santana's not even here. I don't know what's going on. So MJF said that he thinks he might be the issue because people think MJF wants to break up the Inner Circle. They think he's only there to break up their group or take it over. And he started to get under Sammy's skin. He tried to pass it off like what happened the week before with the towel. When Jericho turned and saw Sammy with it, even though it was MJF who brought the towel out. And Jericho, thankfully, they didn't make him look like a complete moron. He said, Sammy, or Max, he goes, we watch the show every week, so I know it was you. I know it was you who brought the towel out. And he was trying to explain, you know, he was just there, he saw some sweat on his brow, and he was bringing it out for that purpose. But Sammy was not happy with MJF. Ortiz took the microphone. I thought Ortiz was the best part of this entire segment. Ortiz was not acting all goofy and off the walls. He got serious. And he looked at MJF and Wardlow. He acknowledged them as being assets, as talents, but not necessarily as human beings. And then he had the best line. He looks at Wardlow. He goes, Wardlow, he goes, you're great. Never change. Then he looked at MJF. He goes, you know what? You're growing on me. Like a fungus, but you're growing on me. And then he turned to Sammy. He says, Sammy, shake his hand. He goes, sometimes we have to do things we don't want to do. Shake the man's hand. Sammy Guevara did not want to shake MJF's hand. But he explained, he goes, together, we're better off. We're stronger together as a unit. Shake the man's hand. And Sammy said, look, I trust Chris Jericho with everything. So I'm going to shake his hand. But if one more thing happens, I'm going to quit the Inner Circle. And then they shook hands. And now Jake Hager takes the microphone and he's going to speak here for the first time. And while I thought Ortiz was the best person on the mic in this segment, this probably was the part that entertained me the most. And you will never find me saying that about Jake Hager, Jake Hager segment on this show, because Jake Hager is about as exciting as Shaquille O'Neal was on this show. But I did get a kick out of this. He takes the microphone and he says, Wardlow, Why are you always staring at me? And instantly Wardlow is like, what do you mean? You're staring at me. And they're arguing back and forth like a couple of kids. No, you're staring at me. No, you all you do is stare at me. And it's, you know, they're about to go at it. And they agreed. Finally, Jericho got them to agree there would be no more staring. It was almost like, why don't you guys just fuck and get it over with already? But Jericho calmed them down and cooler heads prevailed. And Jericho says, look, the Inner Circle needs to grow. We need to build. MJF stepped up and all of a sudden he interrupts Jericho and he starts talking about his main event match against Orange Cassidy. Jericho says, Max, you're ruining it. And they ended with the Inner Circle salute where they all, you know, do the big flip off. I thought this segment was a lot of fun, actually. Some of the Inner Circle stuff is hit or miss, especially in recent weeks. But I liked this segment. I thought it was good. I thought Ortiz was good. I liked the little banter with Wardlow and with Jake Hager. Wardlow is a star. Wardlow is a star in the making. Of that, I am sure. He's another one. He was recently on the AEW podcast. And if you want to get to know more about him, go ahead and check it out. It was I didn't finish watching the whole thing, but I saw part of it. A very good interview. He's very well-spoken. He's got that deep voice, like as far as him cutting promos and stuff. He's a silent character on TV, so you don't get to hear him very much, but he can talk. We've seen him work. He's had good matches before, so Wardlow is definitely a star in the making. There's no question about it. We had Lance Archer and the Lucha Bros. Lance Archer and the Lucha Bros against Eddie Kingston, the Butcher, and the Blade. Butcher and the Blade. Butcher and the Baker and the people on the street. Where do they go? To meet the Mets. Lance Archer comes out, hits a flying crossbody from the ramp. He tells everybody, get out of the way. And he does this crossbody from the ramp over the top rope, wipes out Eddie Kingston, wipes out the Butcher, wipes out the Blade. So Butcher, about a minute later, takes Penta, and he puts him through the table over by the ring announcer, by the ring announcer, the timekeeper's table. So now he puts him through the table, and at first, you know, when they escorted Penta away, he was selling an injury. I went back to watch it again, just to see if this was a legitimate injury or not. This was a taped show. The show, I believe, was taped last week. I'm sure if there was a big injury, we would have heard about it. And I didn't hear anything about Penta. But then I watched the spot again, and there was nothing out of the ordinary about it. So I assume he was just selling an injury, but he got escorted away. And what we ended up here with was a handicap match. Penta never came back into the match. Archer leveled Butcher and Blade with corner body blocks, hit a diving crossbody that was heading into the commercial break. Butcher and Blade took advantage during the break. When Eddie Kingston knocked Lance Archer, he was doing the top rope walk, and Kingston knocked him off the top rope. Jake Roberts got involved here briefly. He reached in and grabbed the Blade's leg. And that gave Lance Archer an opening to tag in Phoenix. Rey Fénix immediately goes for a springboard dive. Fénix takes out the Butcher, and he had a dive out of the ring, and I always cringe now when I see Fénix do these big dives because he's gotten hurt on Dynamite before doing stuff like this, and this was another rough landing, and he grabbed the back of his head, and I thought maybe he bounced his head off the ground, but he seemed to be okay, and he got back into the ring. Butcher and Blade hit a powerbomb neckbreaker combo on Fénix for the win. After the match, Archer attacked Kingston, Butcher, Blade. Tried to hit the blackout on Blade. Butcher, though, pulled him out, and they escaped. It's good to finally see more Lance Archer on TV. He finally has a direction, which is more than I can say for him for the last, I don't know, probably 3 or 4 months, where it just seemed like they were just biding their time with him, and they didn't know what to do with him, and now he actually has a role here on TV, so that's good to see. And we've seen Jake Roberts get more physically involved with angles over the last few weeks than he has probably his entire run in AEW up to this point. There was a segment that did not air on TV, I think it was last week or maybe 2 weeks ago, where he confronted Eddie Kingston on stage. And then Archer came out and Kingston threw a punch. It was just one punch, but he threw a punch at Jake. And Jake, he kind of stumbled, and then the camera had cut away briefly, and when they came back, he was down on the ground, but, you know, he took a bump. But remember, I mentioned this a few weeks ago, an interview that I saw him do on some podcast, a video podcast that Jake Roberts did. This was only a few weeks ago, and he had an oxygen tube going up into his nose. His COPD from all the years of smoking has gotten so bad that he needs oxygen on him. Now, I don't see oxygen on him when he's out there. I don't know if it's hidden. I don't know if it's not that severe that he needs to have oxygen on him when he is out there on TV. I don't see it, so I assume not. But I'm kind of surprised that he's doing anything physical at all, really. you know, knowing that apparently his problems with the COPD have gotten really bad recently. It was sad watching him. I mean, he was even saying in the interview, like, don't smoke. If there's one thing I tell people, please don't, not to do. And think of all the shit that he's probably done in his life. But he goes, stay away from the cigarettes. They will fuck you up. So that's why I'm a little surprised to see him taking any kind of bump on TV. We had Abaddon. She slithered out for the next match against Tesha Price. And I was only half paying attention when the announcement was being made for the match. So they mentioned, Justin Roberts mentioned Price's name, and I thought he said Tessa at first. And then I perked up and I was like, wait, what? What did he say? He's like, no, it's Tesha. I said, okay. That'd be kind of funny if they debuted Tessa just to feed her to Abaddon in a quick squash. But in fact, it was Tesha, not Tessa. Abaddon hit a back leg trip and a widow's peak for the quick win. That was it. I mean, if it went a minute, I'd be shocked. And Abaddon was assaulting her when the match was over until Hikaru Shida's music played. And out comes Shida with what else? Everybody's favorite weapon. I got to get me one of these. Where do I buy one of these things? One of these big bamboos? I got to go to Bamboo City or something. Do they have a store where I can just walk in? Does Home Depot have them? Because that's what they do with these wrestling shows. They'll send you to the local Lowe's or Home Depot. We need chairs. We need ladders. We need tables. Do they have kendo sticks that they sell at Home Depot? I will buy one so I can have one here on the stream. Because they seem to be in just great supply for all the wrestling promotions. I don't know. You know how many trees that probably have fucking died for these kendo sticks? If they're even made from trees, I don't even know. I look at them, I just think, how many trees had to die to make that kendo stick? But yes, we got a kendo stick. What else? It was everybody's favorite weapon in the War Games match on Sunday. The women had so many kendo sticks, I lost count. Doesn't matter, cross-promotional, WWE, AEW, it doesn't matter. Everybody loves their kendo sticks. So one shot to the head takes Abaddon down. Abaddon did the Undertaker zombie sit-up, immediately sat back up. So Shida grabbed Tesha, and they hightailed it out of there. I'm at my wit's end here with this kendo stick stuff. It's just every week. It's like the lazy go-to weapon. I know it makes a great noise. You saw what happened to poor Dominic Mysterio over the summer, that poor guy. His whole body was purple. After Rollins and Murphy got done with him, hitting him with the kendo stick. So, yeah, I mean, every now and then a good kendo stick, you know, attack could be meaningful. But kendo sticks have now gone the way of the super kick and the dive. I don't know what I hate worse. The diving or the kendo sticks? The worst thing in the world would be to have somebody diving out of the ring with a kendo stick. Then I would just turn the TV off. I want to know where I can get a kendo stick. I need to look this up now. Obviously, you could just walk into a store and buy them. I got to find out where I'm gonna buy a whole bunch of them. I'm gonna build myself a whole kendo stick hut that you can see on camera behind me. It's gonna block out my light, my little LED light behind me. I'm gonna build like a little hut behind me, out of nothing but kendo sticks. So we had Kenny Omega and Don Callis. They made the trip all the way from Nashville. They were on Impact the night before, so they made the trip all the way from Nashville to Jacksonville in a helicopter. And the helicopter lands in the parking lot of Daly's place. They took a chopper from Impact to Dynamite, flying in style, make their way out to the ring. Alex Marvez tried to corner them in the parking lot and get an answer about what are you guys here for? And they just said to him, well, we're going to go to the ring. We're not going to talk to you. So goodbye. He's really annoying, right? I mean, Alex Marvez, he's always popping up at the wrong moment. I know why the Young Bucks super kicked him in the face. I would have done the same thing. Guy's fucking annoying. So Kenny Omega is in the ring, or he's on his way out to the ring. He gets the big cleaner entrance, the big cleaner intro from Justin Roberts, who says he ends with, he is the first contracted AEW star to appear on Impact Wrestling. Says the new AEW World Champion, Kenny Omega. And Tony Schiavone is in the ring because who else would be, right? Tony Schiavone is a man of many hats. He's the go-to guy. And Tony Schiavone tells Don Callis that in all of his years in the wrestling business, he has never been more disgusted by what he saw than what happened on Dynamite last week. And this man, and think about this, this man sat through the dying days of WCW. This guy has seen some shit. So for him to be disgusted to that degree speaks volumes. I think Tony forgot some of the stuff that happened in the dying days of WCW. If he remembered some of the shit that went down in those last couple of years, he wouldn't have made that comment. There are far more things that have happened that he has bore witness to that were more disgusting than what we saw last week on Dynamite. But basically, they just repeated their promo from Impact, the one that I just told you about earlier in the stream here. This was just an inferior, in some ways inferior, modified version. I think probably slightly shorter version of the promo that we got from them on the bus last night with Josh Matthews on Impact. Callis said it took years of planning. They took credit for creating AEW. He says, you people wanted 7-star Kenny Omega. Well, now you got him. Omega said they plotted and planned for over a year for this moment. Callis got Omega then at the end to do his goodbye and goodnight outro. They were promoting Omega, you know, coming into the show. And they said this on Impact last night that he was going to have some kind of big announcement. Oh, you know what it was? I know what it was. Okay, so basically what they were doing is they were teasing that they were going to have some kind of big announcement. And the only hint they gave was Lex Luger, right? They said, we're on a bus, Lex Luger, going back to the Lex Express days. So I guess, I assume then the helicopter. Okay, well, I guess that's what they were getting at, which is still underwhelming. I mean, they were promoting some kind of announcement. I guess with the Luger mention on Impact, I assume they were talking about the helicopter entrance they made on the show, because that's how Luger landed on the Intrepid in 93 when he slammed Yokozuna. Still, I thought it was a little underwhelming given that they were promoting some kind of big announcement. And this ended up pretty much mostly being a rehash of what we saw on Impact last night. But I didn't hate the segment. I like that we finally, after all of this teasing for months about Kenny Omega, is he going to split from Hangman? Who's going to go heel? Who's going to stay babyface? Why is Kenny Omega not being featured as a single star? Why is he being wasted away in the tag team division for so long? And here we are now. We have Kenny Omega as the world champion, as a heel. He's got a manager. He's being positioned as the number one guy now in the company and in prime position right now in AEW. This is what a lot of people have been waiting to see. This is the star power. We're going to start to see what star power he has. The star power that he brings to the table is now going to be on full display. Been a long time in the making, and he's been relegated to the tag team division for so long. You kind of forget that at one point, you know, this guy was one of the biggest wrestling stars in the world. You know, when he was having the matches he was having in New Japan, all you heard about, you heard about Okada, but AJ Styles, but you heard about Kenny Omega. When AJ left and went to WWE, Kenny took his place, and Kenny became a bigger star. And it was Kenny Omega and the world. Where is he going to go? Is he going to go to Impact? Is he going to go to, you know, AEW wasn't a thing at that point. Is he going to go to WWE? Is it going to be a big bidding war for him? That's the Kenny Omega that people have been waiting for. That's the Kenny Omega that I've been waiting to see on this show, because this show could use that kind of star power. And now they have him in that role, and it's great. It's the role that I've been waiting for him to be in. And again, I like him and Don Callis together as a combo. I think they really work well together. This is going to open up a whole bunch of fresh matches, too. I'm sure we're going to get the obligatory rematch, maybe at Revolution in February, between Omega and Moxley. I don't think Moxley is not done with Omega just yet, but there's going to be a whole host of fresh matches with him that we have not seen before. Before they even think about getting back to the Hangman match. And that's what excites me. Let's see what new matches that we can come up with here with him as the smarmy heel. Who can they program him with? Who can they put him in the ring with? Hopefully not Sting. MJF against Orange Cassidy. This was the Dynamite Diamond Final. So they had the Battle Royal last week. As per the stipulation, the final two men of the Battle Royal would go one-on-one this week for MJF's Dynamite Diamond Ring. And it came down to MJF, and it came down to Orange Cassidy. Watching how things played out tonight on this show, I would have much preferred they go with my idea, which was to have Sammy Guevara win, or Wardlow, but probably more so Sammy. Have Sammy win the Battle Royal last week. All of this strife in the inner circle, it would have played into it perfectly. They could have said, look, we got a match tonight. It's going to be a friendly competition between two members of the inner circle, right? You could set that up in the segment earlier in the show. And then they go out there, and why not have Sammy win the ring? And then MJF the next week has to present the ring to Sammy, and Sammy can go around every week and he's taunting him with this ring. I just think it would have made for more entertaining segments on TV. Watching what they did tonight was a letdown. It was underwhelming. I would have rather see Sammy win that Battle Royal with MJF last week. But they start this match, and Orange Cassidy is getting his ass handed to him. He's getting his ass kicked. MJF is working the hand over so that he can't throw the orange punch. Come back from break, best friends had, who were at ringside, they went to the back and they brought out the reinforcements. We were told they brought out the reinforcements. And I'm like, I got to take a look at what these reinforcements look like. The reinforcements were Top Flight. So you got a 19-year-old and a 21-year-old. You've got Griff Garrison, right? Woof, woof, McGruff the dog. And you've got Brian Pillman Jr. Those are the reinforcements. Well, if I had to go to war, I would I'd want to put together a bit of a stronger team. But that's just me. Of all the people in the locker room that you could have recruited to bring out there with you, I get the sense that maybe nobody likes Orange Cassidy. They didn't bother coming out to help watch his back. But there was Griff Garrison. Griff Garrison is going to hold down the fort. Shit's going to go down if anybody fucks with Griff Garrison. Because that guy, he's going to cut you. You better watch yourself. So, the reinforcements were at ringside. It basically turned into a lumberjack match. MJF had attacked the hand. Again, he was trying to take away his signature move. There was a springboard senton MJF. I would like to see MJF hit a springboard senton. Orange Cassidy hit a springboard senton out onto the inner circle. More specifically, really, he took out Jake Hager. That's really who he took out with the move. MJF connected with the Heat Seeker, spiked him right into the mat, goes for the pin, and with his feet on the ropes, referee caught him in the nick of time. MJF grabs Chris Jericho's baseball bat. Remember his bat, Floyd? He's got the bat, and he tried to do the Eddie Guerrero spot, the referee's back turned. He hit the mat, which didn't make any noise, by the way. The whole point is if you use a chair, it makes a noise. He hit the mat, made no noise. He chucked the bat at Orange Cassidy. And Orange Cassidy, I have to say, did not fall victim to dumb babyface syndrome. A dumb babyface would have caught the bat. And when MJF tossed the bat to him, he just let it drop because he's not a fucking idiot. So it backfired on MJF. His plan did not work. And Orange Cassidy hit the beach break for a near fall. He hit the orange punch with the bad hand, and again, MJF kicked out. Connected with a second orange punch. This time, though, Wardlow placed MJF's foot on the rope to break the count. Inner Circle and best friends, they're just going at it now outside the ring. It's a giant brawl. Miro runs to the ring. He turns Orange Cassidy inside out with a clothesline. Referee didn't see it. And MJF drapes his arm over Orange Cassidy. He gets the win. And MJF retains the Dynamite Diamond Ring. He wins it for the second consecutive year. I did not see that coming. I did not think he was going to hold on to the ring, but he does. I wish it was Sammy, but they had other ideas. Miro is going nuts. He is beating people up. He grabs one of the production guys dressed in black, and he picks him up, and he puts him on his shoulder, and he just chucks him off the stage. And it was great, too, because all you saw was the guy falling, but they didn't follow him, right? So it kind of leaves it up to your imagination. It made it look like he fell 10 feet. In reality, he probably fell 5 feet, but it looked great. The guy just disappeared. It's like all those years ago on SmackDown during the Hall of Pain phase of Mark Henry, when he was at his best, he grabbed one of the production guys and literally threw him, like, 15 feet through the air over some equipment boxes, and we never saw the guy again. That's kind of what this, in a way, that's kind of what this reminded me of. Tony Schiavone said he hopes that man's family wasn't watching when that happened. And Miro looked like a monster to end the show, wearing a Versace Jeans Couture t-shirt. So as much of a badass as you can look like wearing a Versace Jeans Couture t-shirt, that is what Miro looked like here at the end of the show. More of that Miro. Wrecking Machine Miro. More of that will get him to where he needs to be. What is going on with his wedding, by the way? They've given no updates on the wedding or the bachelor party. I mean, I'd be fine if they abandoned it, but I thought the whole point was they wanted to do a wrestling wedding because wrestling weddings do well in the ratings. We've heard nothing new about this. I guess the planning is very intense. It takes a while, I guess, to plan these things out. But he looked like a monster, and that's how they went off the air. I thought overall it was a very good show. And there is a lot going on right now, whether it's Sting, whether it's Kenny and Don Callis, the questions about AEW and Impact, Shaq being brought in to, to put over Brandi Rhodes. Wow. I still can't say that with a straight face. Wow. Next Wednesday on Dynamite, Cody takes on Angelico. Matt Hardy and Private Party, Hardy Party, takes on Hangman Page, John Silver, and Alex Reynolds of the Dark Order. Hangman agreed to be their partner for 1 week. So he's going to be doing the Dark Order thing, I guess, for a while. SCU takes on the Acclaimed. Ivelisse and Diamante take on Serena Deeb and Big Swole. And some announcements. AEW, on December 23rd, there is an NBA game, NBA on TNT. They are holding a special event called AEW Holiday Bash that is going to air at 10 p.m. that Wednesday or whenever the NBA game is over. So the NBA game could end at 10:30, it could end at 9:45. That's going to be a late night of Dynamite. We'll see what the streaming plans are. I don't really feel like streaming at 12:30 at night. We'll play that one by ear. So that's the Holiday Bash on the eve of Christmas Eve. December 30th is night one of AEW's New Year's Smash. And then January 6th is night two of New Year's Smash with special guest Snoop Dogg. Uh-oh. Snoop Dogg is going cross-promotional. First, he's got this partnership, this clothing line with The Undertaker. He was interviewing The Undertaker on Instagram a few weeks ago. And now he's going to be on AEW Dynamite because he's one of Cody's fellow judges on that Go Big show on TBS. I guess that's the tie-in there. So Snoop Dogg will be, that's on January 6th. He'll be on Dynamite. That also means that New Year's Smash, Night 2, is going head-to-head opposite NXT's New Year's Evil. So two special events on the same night. And those are your AEW updates. That is your AEW Dynamite recap and Impact recap of sorts for tonight. Now let's see what you guys thought of the show. Did you guys like the show as much as I did? And indeed you did. 79%. See, that is not an appropriate super chat, though. That would be a super chat if the numbers were inversed. Then you would have disappointed Solid Monster. Those are actually pretty good numbers. 79% up, 21% down, and over on the NXT side, 64% up, and about 36% down. That seems to be about in line for what NXT would normally do. Not really all that surprising, I don't think. And now let's play catch up with your super chats and your questions. And if you have questions or comments about tonight's show that you would like to send in, super chats are open. I do read every single one that you guys send in to me. I will also try to keep track of your comments in the chat, but they go so quickly I can't keep up with all of it, but I shall do my best. This is where I turn the show over to you guys. And you tell me what you think. Pedro, what would you think of having Katrina from Lucha Underground manage a heel Pentagon, if or when they split him away from Phoenix? Having her with Pentagon and not Mil Muertes, I don't know, it just feels wrong. By the way, Mil Muertes is being, they're teasing Mil Muertes coming into MLW. I saw a little promo that Selena De La Renta was doing, and it looked like it was a teaser for Mil Muertes, possibly under that character, coming into MLW. And where Mil Muertes goes, I don't know. Perhaps Katrina will follow. If Katrina goes to MLW, she might just get me to watch. So we'll have to keep an eye on that and see. But I don't think Pentagon needs a valet. I don't think he needs anybody. Guy Coyle started listening to you after the Nexus debut, and first time I've managed to stay awake long enough to super chat. He is in the UK. It is 3 o'clock in the morning. That is pretty crazy that you would even be up at this hour. I would be passed out on the floor. And very appropriate, by the way, that you are from the UK. And we have a William Regal super chat. Look at that. Pop up on screen. I couldn't even time that shit better. Thank you, guy. Thank you for staying up late with me, guy. I appreciate that. Pedro again. Pedro is dropping super chats tonight. I love seeing Sting. It brings me back to 97 when I was 5, and Sting was my favorite. I don't think anybody touches Sting in being able to get a reaction from the crowd by saying less than he does. EJ watched the 92 Rumble instead of Impact last night. Well, you have good taste. Jacob Donnelly, I sometimes forget how Sting sounds, so I was a little off guard when he spoke. I was just caught off guard by how happy he sounded. I mean, I guess if you got a big fat contract from a billionaire, I'd be pretty happy too. But yeah, he had a big smile on his face. And in a way, he almost reminded me of Joker Sting a little bit there from Impact. Jared M. with the $35. I hope Jared is doing well. One of our long times. Magician Sapphire. I don't think AEW is going to hit a million, but I hope it does. I just don't think they will, and I'll be happy to eat crow if they do. I want to see them do well. I want to see NXT do well. I don't think they're going to do it. I'm not a betting man. I would not put money down on that, but I don't think they're going to. I think they're going to be a little bit under that. EJ, did Golden Boy leave AEW? He has been MIA forever. I don't know what the deal is with Golden Boy. They had Chris Van Vliet, remember, on one of their early shows. But that was never like an official AEW signing. And so maybe Golden Boy was the same thing. Maybe it wasn't like a full-time AEW signing. I heard his commentary a little bit when he was doing, I think it was Fyter Fest maybe. It was like probably last summer. And I thought he was pretty good. But I don't know what his status is with the company. Spanish Goddish. Did you see the report that EC3 is... I did see your tweet, by the way. Did you see the report that EC3 is going to be a free agent? Is he AEW bound? If he does show up to AEW, who would you like to see him feud with? He can feud with any number of people. I think the old MJF, or rather the old EC3 character, because now he's doing a different kind of character on TV. The old EC3... would have, him and MJF being in the same company together doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Or them, you know, kind of being on the same TV show. This version of EC3 is a little bit different. It's not the same as the persona he was portraying before. I don't know how I feel about it. But, I mean, he deserves a shot. He got jobbed out so badly in WWE. Here's the thing about that that really angers me. The thing about it that really pisses me off, okay? Because there are people that would say to me, what's the big deal about EC3? I never really saw him as being anything special in the ring. And you know what? You could actually compare him in some ways, I think, to Nick Aldis. Because I hear the same knocks about Nick Aldis sometimes. You know, he's not a flashy guy. He doesn't do all these fancy moves. Well, he doesn't have to. And neither does EC3. EC3 shined because of his personality. I thought he was very entertaining as a heel. Especially when they paired him off with Rockstar Spud. And you had both of them in WWE at the same time. And by the time they were doing stuff, it wasn't even stuff the creative team was coming up with. They were just doing stuff on social media on their own. But I guess maybe because another company did it, we can't. Well, you know what? I don't even think it's that. I just think he had that match with Dean Ambrose on TV and it didn't get over because fuck that guy. He had 3 minutes on television. Nobody knew who the fuck he was. And hey, he didn't get over. So fuck him. And just like that, your career is over. That's how fickle they can be. The guy got jobbed out worse than most people do in that company. Just based on that one match, his career just took a nosedive after that. And I don't know if EC3 would go on to be a world champion anywhere else other than Impact. But I would like to see the guy get a shot in a major promotion because I think he could have done well for himself. The fact that he had that opportunity taken away from him, and I don't blame him for that at all. That's what really upset me about the whole EC3 thing. So I hope he gets a shot, whether it's AEW or he sticks with Impact. I don't know. I mean, he'll, you know, AEW would be a bigger place for him to go. I hope he at least gets the opportunity because he never had a chance in WWE. The moment he got called up, he was done. He was finished, and it wasn't even anything he did. He got screwed. And I'd like to see him get a chance somewhere. So I don't know what the future holds for him, but you know what? Just to stick it to the old man, I'd like to see him get over somewhere in a big way. Of all the people who you could say were bitter or they left or like Miro showed up and said you could take your brass ring and stick it up your ass, the guy who I would really like to see do that, go somewhere and take that brass ring and shove it up their ass, is probably EC3. Just because they never gave him a fair shake. Chris Ludek, great comparison on Vince and USWA in 93. If you look up McMemphis on YouTube, you can see all the promos, even Bret Hart and Macho Man. Yeah, it's crazy to look back on that. Tatanka, there was like a heel promo from Tatanka during that time. It was really groundbreaking stuff, if you think about it. I mean, at that time. But I guess Vince just saw it as his own little playground. Nobody would know he's down there, and he can just be the babyface announcer in his own company and then go to Memphis and heal it up. That's where he first got prepped for the Mr. McMahon character. It happened in Memphis. Big Armada, 1988. I'd like to see Tony Khan have a Stan Lee-esque cameo role on TV like Lee had in the Marvel movies, where he just kind of shows his face for 10 seconds. I don't think he needs to be on Dynamite at all. Tamara Davis, keep up the good work. Thank you for all of your help in the chat. Tamara is one of our mods. And so show some love for Tamara. Oz and Gloria, shout out to Jim Cornette, the miserable Rush Limbaugh of wrestling. Spanish Goddess, top three favorite 80s songs. There's too many. There's just way too many. I can't possibly narrow it. You put me on the spot. I can give you a whole bunch of Hall & Oates songs. I'll give you one. I've been on a bit of a Who kick of late. Jackalope, look at that. Spooky, crazy Jeff Hardy. One of my favorite super chats right there. Thank you, Jackalope. Jackalope's the one who got me the bottles of bubbly that I had when I did the inbox stream on the 13-year anniversary show. He was the one that, as an anniversary gift. Actually, no, it was a birthday gift. That's what it was. It was for my birthday. And then on the anniversary, I busted them out. That's what it was. Anyway, I was saying Eminence Front by The Who. I've been listening to that song a lot lately, so. You never heard of that song, Eminence Front by The Who? Check it out. It's one of my new favorites. The True Heel Master. This version of Sting in AEW right now feels more cool, fresh, and hip. It's great to see cool, fresh, and hip. I mean, look, I like Sting, but what exactly is cool, fresh, and hip about Sting all of a sudden. I will say that in WWE, they really didn't do much with him. So we never really got to see too much of this side of Sting, but we saw plenty of this Sting in Impact. I don't know that I've heard cool, fresh, and hip associated with Sting. I don't think anybody has said that about Sting probably in 25 years, but as long as you're enjoying it, brother, that's all that matters. Lords of Gotham Entertainment, thank you for the $5. Appreciate that. GV2186, the NWA is back with a show called Shockwave. Yes, I did mention that last week. I have not had a chance to check it out yet. I think episode 2 is up. And there was a match from a few months ago between Thunder Rosa and Priscilla Kelly that I heard was very good. So I'm going to try to check that out maybe later this week. Oz and Glorious, Brandy needs her own two-hour non-cooking show. Michael Hilliard, what's going on, Michael? Shaq only feuds with people who make bi-weekly heel turns. That's right, Shaq and Big Show. You are correct. I didn't even make that connection, but you're right. Stephen Chappa, thank you for the $15. Quintus Brown, did you see Tony Khan's tweet? We are getting a 14-man tag next week on 14-man tag. Well, what is the match? Somebody in the chat, let me know what the tweet was so I can let everybody know. I can let everybody know what the match is. No name required. And the chat says, you've been doing this since 2007. You look like you're 18. On occasion, I will still get carded. It does happen. It doesn't happen as often, but it does happen from time to time. I take that as a compliment. I take that as, you'd be shocked if I told you how close I was to a certain midlife crisis. You would be surprised. Let's see here. The True Heel Master. I wish AEW makes another diamond ring instead of using the same one. All right, so in the chat, they're saying the Nightmare Family. Oh, Oz and Gloria says Inner Circle against Best Friends. And all right, now you're just being silly. Is there a 14-man tag or not? Because if so, I will let everybody know. Best Friends, Top Flight, Varsity Blondes against the Inner Circle. 14-man tag match sounds like overkill to me. Frost 757, Snoop Dogg on AEW. Good thing they don't drug test. Spanish is back. You heard the report that Penta is injured. Well, that's the thing. I mean, he was carried out, and it got me a little concerned. But when I went back and I watched the spot, it didn't look like he was legitimately hurt. But he never did come back into the match. So it is possible he is hurt. I did not see that report. But it is possible that there is a legitimate injury there. He was holding his leg. I hope it's not true, but I could believe it. The way they were selling it, I could believe it. Jackalope, many people enjoyed Snoop Dogg's fight commentary for Tyson. Yeah, I did too. I heard his commentary for the Tyson fight, and I actually thought he was probably the best part of that show. But he said many people enjoyed Snoop Dogg's fight commentary for Tyson and Roy Jones. AEW talent would have done well as guests on his popular GGN YouTube show. I think he would have made a better partner for AEW than Tyson. Big exposure. I'm glad you brought that up because that actually was one of the highlights of the whole Tyson-Roy Jones show. Was Snoop, he was marking out on commentary. He's just dropping cuss words and bombs. Like, if you were sitting in the living room just watching the fight with him, this is how he would do commentary. One and only top three female superstars of the year in any promotion so far. Well, I haven't really seen too much of, like, Jordynne Grace and Deonna Purrazzo as much as I probably should in Impact. So, probably got to give them, because I know they, you know, Deonna Purrazzo especially has been doing big things, so you have to give those women their props. I'm trying to think, like in WWE, who has really stood out on the women's side in 2020? I think more NXT, honestly. I mean, Rhea Ripley has not had the best 2020. She had a better 2019, I think, than she did 2020. But I think of her, I think of Io Shirai. I'm trying to think on the main roster. Who is really... Honestly, I keep coming back to Asuka. Asuka has had a nice comeback year for herself. And now they don't know what to do with her. She's teaming up with Lana and she's just doing... It's like she's just killing time until Charlotte Flair comes back. But Asuka has been one of the MVPs in that company all year long. I might do a more complete list, though, when we get to the end of the year. When we get to the year-end stuff, I got to think about like my top 10 matches and stuff. I haven't really put that full list together yet. One of my favorite super chatters, Huge As, Impact should replace Josh Matthews with you. I don't think they're going to do that. I don't think Impact is going to do that, but thank you. Brandon Mobley, thank you for the weekly review. As always, my daughter is asleep and I am entertained. Much love from Texas. And Oz and Glorious, I am ready for Sting against CM Punk. Inject it into my veins. CM Punk said this week on Renee Young's podcast that, or at least it certainly came across that he's not closed the door completely on possibly coming back to wrestling, and AW could be a potential landing spot if there was any interest. Never say never. I don't see Punk coming back. I mean, it's been 7 years, right? 6 years. Going on 7 years. If he wanted to come back, I feel like he would have been back by now. He doesn't need the money. So I don't think it's a slam dunk that eventually he'll come back. I know generally speaking in wrestling, everybody comes back, right? Nobody ever really goes away. Some people go away. Jack Briscoe went away. Randy Savage went away, although by that point he was already old. CM Punk's not quite that old. So I think we're caught up on the Super Chats. That was fun. That was fun. Thank you for all of the questions. And thank you for all of the support. Last week, you killed it. You killed it again this week, man. The support has been amazing all through November and into December, which is great. I want to end the year on a strong note. I got a whole bunch of live streams planned. TLC is coming up. We'll probably do a TLC prediction stream a few days before that. I am aiming to do another inbox on New Year's Eve. That is the plan. I will let you guys know. We can ring in the new year together, and I can take your email questions. TheSolemonster@gmail.com, by the way, if you want to send in an email question. So I've got that. Oh, and by the way, some of you might be interested to know that either tomorrow or Friday, I will be recording the latest installment of RSPW Rewind, which I know a lot of you have been waiting for. It's been a couple of months since I've done one, and it's a good one. Got some good content in there. So RSPW Rewind probably will be up by the end of the week. So watch for that here on the channel. If you're not subbed, hit that sub button. That way when new content like that goes up, you will be alerted. Hopefully you guys are getting the alerts for these live streams. You should be getting an email alert anytime I go live. So thank you for joining me for all of that. One more time here, the AEW poll, which you can vote in at Solemonster on Twitter. Almost 80% for Dynamite, thumbs up. And over on the NXT side, it's right around 65%. The True Heel Master, I am predicting a Sting versus Chris Jericho at Double or Nothing 3. When I was talking about potential matches for Sting last week, what did I say? I mentioned Chris Jericho as being the likeliest person for him to be in the ring with because Jericho is going to want that match. If Sting is going to wrestle, Jericho's going to want that match. I don't think the two of them have ever worked together before. Jericho may be the safest person that Sting could even think of stepping into the ring with. And it kind of sells itself, right? Two veterans, first time ever, one-on-one. I've already seen one fan-made poster for it online. Jericho wearing the like Sting-like face paint. you know, similar to the face paint, the Painmaker face paint he wears in New Japan. It'd be a big match for them to promote on one of their pay-per-views, that's for sure. Jericho's got to lay off the bubbly, though. Check out episode 681 of The Sound Off from this past Sunday. I went almost 3 hours. I covered a ton of stuff. I'm going to be back with you on Sunday for episode 682 of The Sound Off. And again, watch for the new RSPW Rewind. It's going up in the next couple of days right here on the Solid Monster Sounds Off channel. Have yourselves a great night. Thank you for all of the super chats. You guys are the best. I got the best fucking fans in the world, man. You guys are awesome. All the people that have sent me messages that you bought my mom's children's book, that means a lot to me. Again, The Adventure of Hardy the Horse. If you know somebody who's got kids, I'm just saying, the holidays are coming up. Go to Amazon.com where you can find more information about it on my Twitter. I appreciate all of you. Have yourselves a great week, and I'll see you back here again in a few days for more content. Until then, take care, guys.